Canto 11, Chapter 21, On Distinguishing Between Good and Bad. The Supreme Lord said, "They who give up my paths of jnana, karma and bhakti will, in the cultivation of their lusts and fickle senses, keep moving through the cycle of birth and death." When one manages to be steady in one's position, that is called virtue, while the opposite of it is considered vice. This is the conclusion about these two. What would be pure or impure concerning the religion, what would be vice or virtue in normal affairs, and what would be favorable or unfavorable for one's physical survival, are matters of good and bad one must evaluate from the same category of elements, O sinless one. What is good for the body, for instance, is not necessarily good for the religion. This approach of matters I put forward for the sake of those who bear the burden of religious principles. Earth, water, fire, air and ether are the five basic elements that, from Lord Brahma down to the non-moving creatures, constitute the bodies of the living beings who are all connected in the Supreme Soul. Even though they consist of the same elements and in that sense are equal, the Vedas assign different names and forms to them in service of their self-interest, Uddhava. What would be the right and wrong considerations concerning the time, place, the things and so on, is established by me with the purpose of restricting materially motivated activities. Among all places, those places are impure, where there is no respect for the Brahminical culture and no spotted antelopes can be found, where there are no saintly cultured men even when there are spotted antelopes, where it is unclean like Kikata, places not consecrated and unprepared, and places where the earth is barren. The time that by its nature, solar position, lunar phase, or by its objects, appointment by calendar and sundial, is suitable for performing one's prescribed duties, is considered good, and the time that impedes the performance of one's duties, or is unsuitable, nighttime for instance, or times of different obligations, is considered bad. The purity or impurity of a thing or of a substance is determined, validated, with the help of another thing, in respect of what one says about it, by means of a ritual performance of purification, in respect of time or according to its relative magnitude. Whether it, knowing the quality of the thing, imposes a sinful or pious reaction upon a person, depends on that person's power or impotence, intelligence, wealth, condition and place. By a combination of time, air, fire, earth and water, or by each of them separately, matters are purified like grains, things made of wood, clay and bone, thread, skins, liquids and things won from fire. When something, in touch with that what is impure, removes a bad smell or dirt and thus restores the original nature of an object, one speaks of purification. A twice-born soul should be pure in his activities with cleansing himself in remembrance of me by bathing, charity and austerity, as also by performing his duties and purificatory rituals according to his age and individual capacity. The purification, derived from a mantra, is a consequence of the correct knowledge about it. The purification by a certain act is the consequence of one's dedication to me. Dharma, religiosity, prospers by the purity of the six factors as mentioned, the place, the time, the substance, the mantras, the doer, and the devotional act, whereas godlessness, adharma, is produced by the contrary. Sometimes, though, a virtue turns out to be a vice, and a vice turns out to be a virtue. Respecting the regulative principles, one is thus faced with the fact that the distinction between what is good and bad is factually effaced by them. The same performance of karma, because of which one person falls down, is not the cause for another to fall down. Someone who fell in love, for instance, does not fall any further, For such a one, natural attachment changes into a virtue. Whatever one desists from, one is freed from. This is for human beings the foundation of religious life, natural, pious living, that takes away the suffering, fear, and delusion. When one presumes the objects stimulating the senses to be good, a person will develop attachment as a consequence. From that attachment, lust originates, and because of that lust to enjoy at will, there is quarrel among people. Because of quarreling, there is the anger that is difficult to handle, and because of anger, there is ignorance. And thus, someone's broad consciousness is quickly overtaken by darkness or narrowed consciousness. O saintly soul, a living being bereft that way of clear understanding becomes empty-headed, so that, as a consequence, having fallen away from the goals in life, such a person, just like dull matter, is as good as dead. Adhering to the sensual affair, vainly living the life of a tree, one fails in knowing oneself and others, so that one's breathing is nothing more than pumping air. The awards promised in the Karmakanda part of the scriptures are for men not the highest good. They are merely enticements to create a taste for the ultimate good, upasana kanda, similar to what one says to make someone take a medicine. From the moment they are born, mortals develop a mind of attachment to their family, their vital functions, and the objects of their desire, because of which they lose sight of the interest of their soul. Why would those of intelligence, the Vedic authorities, encourage souls to further engage in those attachments, because of which they, on the path of danger, blind to their real interest, in submission to karmic actions, land in darkness? Some who thus, with a perverted intelligence, do not understand the purpose of finding fulfillment in Krishna, speak in karma mimamsa flowery language about sacrificing for the sake of material benefits, something about which he who really knows the Vedas does not speak. Those who are lusty, miserly, and greedy take the flowers of karmic sacrifices for the fruit of realization. Bewildered by the fire, they suffocate from the smoke and do not realize their position, their true identity of being an individual soul instead of a body. Armed with their expressions, my dear, they do not know me who is seated within their heart and from whom this universe generated that is also me. In their self-indulgence, they are like people staring into fog. Not understanding my confidential conclusion, they, absorbed in their sensuality, as meat-eaters are attached to the violence against animals that may occur under conditions in nature, but certainly never is encouraged for sacrifices. In reality, they take pleasure in being violent against the animals that, without necessity, were slaughtered for their sense gratification. With their ritual worship of the gods, the forefathers, and the leading spirits, they are mischievous people. In their hearts, they all, like businessmen investing their money, imagine to achieve in a world that in words sounds nice, but which is as unreal as a dream. Established in the mode of passion, goodness, or ignorance, they worship the gods and others headed by Indra, who likewise delight in passion, goodness, and ignorance, but me they do not worship properly. They think, when we worship the demigods with sacrifices here, we will enjoy heaven, and when that has ended, we will turn back to earth in a nice home and a fine family. With their minds thus bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas, they nevertheless, as proud and most greedy men, are not attracted to my topics. The Trikanda-divided Vedas have the spiritual understanding of the true self, the soul, as their subject matter, but also the seers, who esoterically express themselves more indirectly, the other gurus, are dear to me. The transcendental Vedic sound, manifesting itself at different levels in the prana, the senses and the mind of the pure, self-realized, enlightened person, is most difficult to understand. It is unlimited and as unfathomably deep as the ocean. The groundless, changeless absolute of endless potencies that I promote as my nature is represented within the living beings in the form of sound vibrations, just as in a lotus stalk there is the appearance of a single strand of fiber. The way a spider weaves its web from the heart by its orifice, the breath of the Lord, the prana from the ether, is manifesting the sound vibration through the mind in the form of the different phonemes. Full of nectar, comprising all the shapes that branch out in thousands of directions, the master, decorated with consonants, vowels, sibilants, and semi-vowels, has expanded from the syllable om. By the elaborated diversity of expressions and metrical arrangements that each have four more syllables, he himself creates and withdraws again the vast, unlimited expanse of the Vedic manifestation of sound. For instance, the meters Gayatri, Ushnik, and Anushtup, Brihati, and Pankti, as also Trishtup, Jagati, Atichanda, Atyashti, Atijagati, and Ativirat, have each, in this order, four more syllables. The confidential heart of the matter of what these literatures, Karmakanda, enjoin to be done, what they, Upasana Kanda, indicate as being the object of devotion, what aspects they describe or what alternatives they, Jnana Kanda, thus offer as philosophy, is in this world not known by anyone else but me. I am the one enjoined. I am the object of worship. I am the alternative, the philosophical hypothesis that is offered, and the one who is explained away. The transcendental sound vibration of the Vedas establishes me as being their meaning and elaborately describes the material duality as a department of the bewildering energy one has to emasculate to ultimately become happy.